Good afternoon. Y'all awake?
Yes.
Okay. Some of us are awake. My name is Maggie Hogan. This is Maps and Timelines. In case you're lost, you should stay. I'd like to go ahead and open us up in prayer, please. Dear Lord Jesus, we just lift up this time to you, Lord. You are an awesome God, and you are the compass of our life. You have a plan for us, Lord, and a purpose, and we praise you for that. I thank you right now for all the conference workers, people who have put on this great event. Thank you for their servant's heart, Lord. And right now, I pray for these families here, Lord, that you would just give them what they need in the way of encouragement and wisdom for their homeschooling path. In your precious holy name we pray. Amen. Amen. I've never been to Maine before. This is so cool. Someone came up to me today and said that there's the world's biggest globe in Freeport. I can't tell you how excited we all are to go see. We're going to go see that Monday or Tuesday. So, you know, Maine, we're very excited. Bob and I are from Dover, Delaware. We're not from Dover, Delaware. We live in Dover, Delaware. We began homeschooling in 1991. We have two sons. JB is 21, and he is currently in the Army, 3rd Infantry Division. That might ring a bell. And he's stationed right now at Fort Benning, Georgia. He has been to Baghdad and back driving a Bradley. I want to say a little tank, but I know there's a proper name. It's a Bradley. I learned more about Middle Eastern geography when he was overseas than I ever learned before. You know, sometimes motivation to learn things comes from strange places. He's back in the States for the rest of the year. He goes back again to Iraq probably the end of this year. Tyler, our youngest, is graduating this year. If I'd thought ahead, I would have seen about getting him permission to graduate at your conference. And then he could graduate every conference we go to this year that has a graduation. He could be like really, really graduated. Wouldn't that be cool to have 12 graduation ceremonies? I didn't think of it until yesterday. We began our business, Bright Ideas Press. It was a hobby that grew out of control, as sometimes hobbies tend to do. And we've been traveling around the country ever since. The geography thing is kind of one of those weird little God has a sense of humor things. When I took geography in 7th grade, it was required. It's the most boring class I've ever had in my entire life. We only had a textbook. I think the whole thing must have been economic geography because it's all I remember is stuff about gross national product. And frankly, I don't like math. It was hideous. And I came away from that thinking I hated geography. But at the same time I was in that class, there was a boy named Robin and a boat called the Dove. Anybody here remember Robin and the Dove? I'm not that much older than everybody. Okay. Maybe I am. He set out to be the youngest person to sail around the world solo. He was 16 years old and he was followed by the National Geographic. He was followed by TV and newspapers, magazines. And I put a map up on my bedroom wall to follow Robin's journey around the world. I thought that was the most exciting adventure. In fact, I was so excited about it. I was 12 at the time. I used the money I had saved up and bought a small sailboat. Now, I grew up in Florida, so it's not that odd. And I took sailing lessons, and I learned how to sail, and I was going to be the youngest female to sail around the world. Unfortunately, my boat sunk one day, and it kind of put an end to that particular dream. But so on the one hand, all this stuff that's geography, I'm loving it, but I don't connect. I don't realize it's geography because what I'm having in school is so boring and so dull, I never want to hear the word geography again. Now, fast forward a very long period of time, and I start homeschooling. And after about the first year, it occurs to me, oh, I'm supposed to teach geography. I hate geography. What am I going to do? But as I began to research what geography is really all about, I discovered it's things that I've always liked anyway. I just didn't recognize it as geography. So I'm going to read to you a definition of geography. This comes from the National Geographic Society. All right, listen to this and see if you recognize geography. Geography is the knowledge of place names, location of cultural and physical features, distribution and patterns of languages, religions, economic activities, populations, and political systems. physical regions and physical phenomena such as tectonic activity, volcanoes, landform, climate, bodies of water, soils, flora, and fauna. The changes in places and areas through time, including how people have modified their environment. Cartographers' tools such as maps, instruments, graphs, and statistics are also a part of geography. Do you see from that definition that geography is far more than just naming a place on a map or memorizing someone's gross national product? Once I realized that, I spent a lot of time researching how could I best teach geography. I was looking for really good materials, and I didn't find a lot of existing curriculum or existing materials. I found some good references and some good resources. So I began making a lot of notes, and someone found out I was doing this, and they asked me to speak about it locally, and then someone else found about it, and I spoke about it at our state level. Well, I wanted to bring a handout to the state workshop that I was doing, but it got out of hand, and that's how Hands on Geography came about. This is the handout that just wouldn't end. So this is for elementary, kindergarten through about fifth grade, lots of hands-on projects for making geography fun and interesting, not dull and boring. A few years later, I co-authored The Ultimate Geography and Timeline Guide with Cindy Wiggers. This goes K through 12. It does not overlap the projects that are in this book, but it does have a complete middle school and high school curriculum in it. All right, I'm going to start with maps today. There's two things I want you all to remember. What we perform, we remember. That's the whole basis of hands-on. What we perform, we remember. There's something about doing it with your hands that goes right to that long-term memory. Secondly, if it's fun, we're motivated to do more. If it's fun, we're motivated to do more. The first time I looked at an outline map, I thought it was the most boring map I had ever seen. It was black and white. I thought, this is dull. I like my maps colorful. So maybe you are like me and you don't know a lot about the differences between the maps, and I want to show you a few things right now. There's basically two categories of maps. There are reference maps and there are outline maps or activity maps. Reference maps are filled out for you. They're labeled for you. Activity or outline maps are left blank so that you, preferably your children, or maybe both, fill them in. A reference map, they come in all shapes and sizes. A couple things to look for when you're purchasing a reference map. Look for one that has Africa in the center. If you're looking at a world map, look for one with Africa centered. Why is that? In the United States, many of the maps that are made center the United States in the world. And what happens when you put the United States in the center is Asia's broken up on the left and the right, which is a little hard to explain that that's one continent. But we're so, you know, America's in the center. And also, when you put America up and in the center, it distorts the size of it. I always thought the United States was quite large, as big as Africa, the way the maps in my school look. But when you look at it, that's not the case. So look for Africa in the center. The second thing that you want to look for is something that's politically up to date. Our world changes phenomenally quickly, and names of countries and capitals tend to change. Did you know that Bombay, India is no longer Bombay, India? You guys know that, right? It's Mumbai, M-U-M-B-A-I, I think. Names change. Now, that's going back actually to an old name that it had originally, but just keeping up with those kinds of things, you want to have a fairly current map. You don't need to get a new one every year, but keep one that's not from the 1950s up on your wall. They come in different sizes. Small desk size maps that a child can work at on the desk. That maybe, this one is interesting. It's labeled and done in different ways. There's an outline one on one side. There's continents on the other side. But they come in all different kinds of formats. Find the one that meets the needs of your family. Now, if you're looking at outline maps, an outline map simply means there's no labeling. It may or may not have boundaries and borders on it. It may or may not have bodies of water, mountains, those types of things on it. The first time I saw this map, I held it up. It said ancient civilizations at the top, and I stared at this map for quite a long time before confessing that I was clueless. Where is this? I had no idea. Someone very nicely came along and turned it correctly for me, But see, I don't think it's fair that you would put the label facing this way and you have to hold it like this. That really bugs me. But anyway, yeah, I looked at this and I was clueless. And if you go home today with an outline map and you put it in front of your kids and say, look what I got, you're going to do all kinds of neat things with this, they're going to be clueless too. You have to train them how to use these maps. One of the easiest hints that I've learned over the years is to first identify a body of water on the map or a piece of land that's very distinctive. I love Italy for no other reason. It helps me to figure out where I am in the Mediterranean. I love Florida. You know, find pieces of land or bodies of water. When you begin to label, start with that place and then work your way out in concentric circles. It's easier than trying to go all over the atlas and then label places. It helps you to stay proportionate. I'm just going to have to keep moving things. This looks like my desk at home. I can't help it. There's all different kinds of things that you can do with outline maps. They can be used. This one was used. Let's see. Voyage of Discovery. The family that did this took timeline pictures or pictures off the internet of explorers, put them on there for that visual interest, and drew lines where the voyages of discovery came from and went to. They put the flags up there as a reminder of who they were exploring for. This was a very simple map to make, but it's visually appealing, and it helps the students to remember what they saw because, one, they're putting this information on the map, and two, because it is visually interesting, they're going to look at it more than one time. That's another key point. If you buy a map or some type of, whether it's a reference map or an outline map, and you put it up, don't leave that same map up in the same place year in and year out because it becomes invisible. Did you know that? They disappear from sight. You need to rotate. That's one of the reasons I love to go to garage sales and pick up old, not anymore. I have enough National Geographics now to wallpaper a whole, I don't know, subdivision. But I pick them up to get the maps inside them. Now, not the current political maps, because often they were very, very old, but National Geographic has cool thematic maps. And so I would put some of the thematic maps up and we would rotate those just to have different maps to look at. It creates an environment in which kids are asking questions. You know, who are those people? What is that place? What do we call it now? Whatever the questions might be, and gives you a reason to look up information. Another way that you can use outline maps is for science. This one happens to be a weather map. But think about it. Earth science and geography are practically synonymous. When you're learning about volcanoes and earthquakes and all that sort of information, you can use the map work and help tie in that connection to geography. Maps tie into almost any subject, given just a little bit of creativity. You can actually even tie maps into math, although that's not my favorite thing to do. It can be done because statistics and graphs are both geography and their math. So you can use maps in a lot of different ways. Probably the map that we've used the most over the years is this two-sided map. The United States is on one side, and the world is on the other. And here's what I want to tell you about the larger outline maps. This is what really helped us to get going on the outline maps. I always had a current political map up on my kitchen wall. That's where we did school. And I thought my boys were really smart, because every time we mentioned a place and you know, you talk about politics at dinner or different current events, things are going on, I would ask the kids to find where we were talking about on the map. And they would pretty quickly find that country or that city. Well, I picked up one of these maps many, many years ago, and I put it up on the wall, and I asked them to find that place on the outline map. And they couldn't do it. The reason they couldn't do it was they were so accustomed to reading the name of the place, they hadn't spent the time to learn really where that place was in relationship to other places. So I quickly found out that we needed to use the reference map as reference, but I had them work on this map so they could actually learn where cities and countries were in relationship to one another. One of the things that they enjoyed doing. My boys always like money. Do your kids like money? When they were younger, they liked foreign money. Now they like American money, but they always like money. And so we would have foreign currency. It's very easy to find. Mention it at work or at church that your kids are interested in collecting foreign currency, and you'll have bags of the stuff. My brother traveled a lot. This is from Bolivia. And he would send us back currency, and we would just put Post-it glue stick or two-sided tape, tape it around the borders of the map, and then the boys would draw a line from the currency to the country from which it came. And since they're interested in money, this was a great little activity for them. We also did the same thing with stamps from other countries. Stamps are another, plus they're smaller, you can fit a lot more of them on there. And again, same way for collecting stamps. Just mention to people you want stamps, and they'll start rolling in. You can put your missionary cards, missionaries that you might support, up there. Where do they live? Postcards. People go on trips, send you postcards. My family travels a lot, and I never could get them to mail me any postcards. It finally occurred to me one day, oh, it's because they think I want them to write me a letter. I don't want them to write me a letter. I just want the postcard, maybe the stamp. Once I told them that, they would collect me the postcards, and I would get blank postcards, you know, all in one bundle. But put these up around the borders of the map and let them draw lines. If you have a kid that's into sports, what about baseball cards? Where are the teams? Use the United States side of the map. Or where are the players from? You may need the world side for that. And they can follow their baseball teams. In fact, speaking of sports, if you stop and think about it, a great activity for especially for boys who love sports, is finding the geographic meaning or reference within the names of the teams in a particular league. It's amazing, but it seems like most sports teams have a geographic allusion in their name. For example, Miami Hurricanes. Hurricanes is weather, weather's geography. New York Jets. Jets is transportation. Transportation's geography. Baltimore Orioles. Orioles are bird. Birds are geography. And see what they can find tracing or tracking their favorite team names. Girls might enjoy these little Dover books. You pick them up for like a buck. They have children from around the world with a little, like the little paper doll things. You could have them take the paper dolls or something that they've drawn themselves and put around the borders and draw the lines. You can find a sticker for almost anything anymore, thanks to the popularity of scrapbooking. But I will warn you, if you put stickers on laminated maps, it's usually pretty much permanent. I wouldn't count on getting that back off. Although I know people who have done that because they really wanted to make a very cool decorated map, and they weren't going to try to reuse that map. So it just depends on what your purposes are. Okay, that's the outline maps in the large format. What about wall space? Is that a problem in your house? If I have a wall, I got maps falling on me back here. If I have a wall on my house that doesn't have a door in it, it's probably got a bookcase up on it. So wall space was always at a premium. But I discovered that if I went to the craft store and bought this, it's not poster board, it's the foam board. It's nice and thick. I would mount my maps on the foam board. We would teach in the kitchen. I would just stand it up on the counter, lean it against the cabinet. When we were through with it, I could either slide it behind the couch or behind the bookcase or under the couch. And I could put five or six on foam board and just have them available. But there's many other creative ways to store maps. If you go to a website called Paula's Archives, that's P-A-U-L-A-S, no apostrophe, archives, archives.com, it will take you to a lady named Paula who is a Sunlight user who has a whole huge section on her website on how to store and make outline maps and timelines. She has a lot of great ideas on there. So even though you may not have the wall space for all of them, there's a way that you can do it. Whether it's putting two hole punches in them and having them on a bar and flipping, you know, making your own old school bar and flipping them over. There's just all different kinds of ways that you can do that. Now, if you don't want just big ones, you want your kids to have their own, you might consider desk size or notebook size outline maps. This is Uncle Josh's outline map book. It has the world covered as well as each state done individually. And these are a high quality map. It really does show the outlines of the coast. It's not just, you know, broadly drawn in. They really has a good, it's really good cartography in there. It also comes on CD-ROM if you want to just print them off the computer. I want to spend a couple of minutes showing you how to find out which atlas is best for your needs. That's probably one of the questions I answer most at the booth. How do I know what atlas to use? The other question I get occasionally is, well, why do I need an atlas? But I'm not even going to go there. You guys are here, so I'm assuming you know that you need an atlas. I had a dad once looking at atlases, and I was talking to him about it. He says, well, we have a really good atlas at home. I said, great, what do you have? He says, my college atlas. I said, that's wonderful. How old is your student? She's six. Your six-year-old cannot read your college-level atlas. It would be like putting them in Play-Doh or something. It's just over their head. You need to find an atlas that has the proper size font and the appropriate amount of labeling. And what I mean is, if the font is too small, young eyes can't see it. And if it has too much labeling, it's too confusing, they can't distinguish what they're looking for. However, a high school level student's going to need a lot more labeling. So that's what you're going to look at. This atlas is for probably pre-K through about first grade. And it really is, it looks like a toy almost. It's so big and oversized and colorful, but it's actually a very good atlas. It's an appropriate atlas. It has a key on it. It has real geographic terms and information on it. But the pages are laminated, so the peanut butter and jelly isn't going to ruin it. And they really can flop on the floor and look at it up close. So this is appropriate for the youngest children. We have one for the world and also one for the United States. Moving up a level, the one that we like best for elementary is the Classroom Atlas. It's by Rand McNally, and what we like about it is for every continent, there's a page of information about that continent, including color photographs and a timeline. Then it breaks down the continent, and there's going to be a physical map, and you can see it's labeled, but it's not heavily labeled. And then there's going to be a physical map. I've got it backwards. So physical was first, and here's the political map. So there's two maps, you know, per continent. Lots of good information. When you're in a bookstore and you're trying to figure out what atlas is a good fit, one thing that you can do is turn to the back of the atlas, look at the index or the gazetteer in the back. The Classroom Atlas is going to have a very short index because there's not as many places labeled as in a bigger atlas. So you can look at that, and then you can look at the next level up. This is the Rand McNally Answer Atlas, and just for example, the back of it has many, many more pages of places labeled. So that's one thing you can look at. But you can also look at this, and you can just see by the font and how much information is on there, this would be great for high school, but it would drive your 10-year-old crazy. But there's no perfect atlas, and I say that because one thing about this atlas that's wonderful is it has questions and answers about each continent, and then it has all the flags for each country. Well, for some kids, that's very appealing. But the flags are not in the elementary level atlas. If you're looking for an atlas to go with your history studies and you're doing ancient civilization, is this going to help you very much? It's all I had the first time I taught ancient civilization. And you know, Thebes is not in here. I looked. I'm like, well, where am I going to find these old names of places that don't exist any longer? So I would go to the library, and I would look in the reference section, and I would get the information, and I would bring it home. Boy, was I glad to find out that you can buy atlases that have all the old names and the old boundaries. This is the Rand McNally Historical Atlas of the World. It goes chronologically through time and gives you the boundaries and the names that were appropriate to that period. So, for example, we have Charlemagne's empire, we have the Roman, here's the Roman Republic in 31 BC. It just goes through time and it gives you the names and the boundaries. Same thing for the Atlas of American History, same idea, but specifically American history. And lastly, but certainly not least, a Bible atlas. If you don't have a Bible atlas in your home, I highly recommend it. When I was in school, the Bible names that I learned in Sunday school had nothing to do with the names I learned in my history class. And so those places never seemed real to me. I think a big faith builder for me was finding out that the names in the Old Testament were real places that really existed, and you could find them on an atlas. So this one's $6.95. You may have a good one in the back of your Bible. Just make sure it's something that your children can actually use. So a number of different kinds of atlases to look at. I want to show you some quick map projects. Might give you some ideas. One of our favorite map projects, and this is something you can do at home, it take you about half an hour to put the ingredients together and to get the basic map made, and that's a salt dough map. If y'all all made a salt dough map, I can hold it like this, I guess. I failed arts and crafts in summer camp. I don't do arts and crafts. I can do a salt dough map because it's salt, water, flour. That's the extent of it. You mix it up in a big bowl. You take an outline map. I usually would photocopy one of these. You glue it to a piece of cardboard. This is a shoebox. And then the kids build the map on top of the outline map using an atlas that has physical geography. So they know where to make the mountains. They know where to make the rivers. Now, this student who made this one, Ryan, I think was 10 or 11 when he made that, he painted it after it dried. I was not likely to get out poster paints. So what we did was we used food coloring when we were making it. I knew we were doing Egypt, for example. I would make some yellow for the desert, a little blue for the Mediterranean and the Nile, and the rest of it might be an orange. No, we had some green. There are some mountains in Egypt. We found that out when we made the salt dough map. I didn't know there's mountains in Egypt. So you just make up the colors that you need. The colors are not as vibrant as on this example, but you know what? Salt dough maps don't last very long anyway. So you make it, take a picture of it, put the picture in their notebooks, and don't worry about saving it because either the humidity or the mice will take care of it in no time. Some other projects that we've done or people have done, this is a... I have a friend that sells scrapbooking supplies. So their family made a scrapbook ABC book of the United States. But what I really love about this is the fact that they cut out their maps. What a hands-on way. They're looking at a map. Maybe they did some tracing, but they cut out their maps. And just by doing that, you pass one on that side too. Just by doing that, the kids are going to remember the shape of that state. And I'm going to tell you a quick story about making maps. When Tyler was 5 years old, Tyler was not reading or writing. Tyler was not much into sitting still at a desk or anywhere else. And one day I was babysitting a friend's baby. Baby was probably about 12 months old. And it was getting close to lunchtime. I knew I needed to make Tyler lunch. I needed to make JB lunch. I had to get the baby situated. And I don't know how this happened. I think I have blanked it out of my memory because it was so hideous. But somehow I spilled a 5-gallon jug of Wesson oil on my kitchen linoleum. That's like a toxic waste dump. I mean, I almost needed to call DENREC in. I mean, it was deep in there. And the worst of it was the high chair was in there, the baby bag was in there, the food was in there. This is the kitchen. And there was no way to get from where I was to that stuff without walking basically through the oil. There wasn't a cabinet or a counter I could get on. So I'm trying not to panic. Tyler's bugging me to get him lunch. The baby's starting to cry. You know, it's one of those days. To make a long story short, there was a desk. On this desk, purely by God's grace, it wasn't anything that was planned. There was a child's atlas and a book of tracing paper. And I said, Tyler, sit down and trace me a map. Now, we'd never done that before. It never occurred to me before. Well, hours go by. I'm trying to get this spill cleaned up, and I realize I haven't heard from Tyler in a really long time. I go and check on him, and the boy is still tracing maps out of his atlas. Well, he didn't like to color. He didn't like to draw. He certainly didn't like to write. And I thought, how could this be? Well, he spent the next few months, and he traced the entire atlas. And when he was through, he brought me all these little pieces of tracing paper. And he said, I want you to put this, we used to make books a lot. He said, I want you to help me make a book out of this. I want to give it to Daddy for Father's Day because he loves maps. I know, it's really sweet. But here's two important things. One, when I pass this around, you'll notice there's words on these maps. He wasn't reading or writing. He traced the words off the atlas. But the important thing is, as the kids grew older, Tyler had such an understanding of how the world connected physically, and he had such a good grasp on where everything was. And I really believe that his advantage was he had spent so much time tracing the world. So I'm not saying make your kid trace a whole atlas. That's child abuse. But you might expose them to it. And, you know, maybe like Tyler, they'll think that's a really cool idea and they'll take off with it. But again, anything that you do with your hands, it's going to help them to remember. A couple more quick projects. We often talk about taking a map and we don't like to use the term blowing it up. We like to say enlarging it, but taking a map, making it bigger. I have friends who take maps and they shrink them down to do things. And I have to show you this. This is a little project on spices. They were doing American history. Do you know kids think we're crazy when we tell them that all of these explorers left their comfortable homes and beds and got on these nasty ships with maggoty bread and roaches and rats, and they left their families to go off looking for cinnamon? I mean, think about it from a kid's point of view. Does that really make any sense to you? So we thought we should stop for a little while and talk about why they were going after these spices. But anyway, I won't go into the whole project, but one of the things that they did was they shrunk the maps and made projects. And you know, kids love working in miniature. So if something big is not appealing or you have a lack of space, think about shrinking things down. I'm going to pass this around. My friend Darlene, we call her Darlene the Frugal Homeschool Queen. She saves everything. She gets everything for free. And she has tons of projects and video cases because she has a very small house and she can store all of them. So here's another one. I'm not even going to go into that right now. All right. I need to move into timelines so that we'll have time to do timelines. I've got some questions to ask. I'm going to test you guys. You all ready? I'm going to ask you, if something happened before or after something else? All you have to say was if it happened before or after. You all ready? Okay. Was Stonehenge built before or after Hammurabi wrote his codes? Was Stonehenge built before or after Hammurabi wrote his codes? I can't hear you. That's good. Almost 1,000 years before. How about this? Who was born first, Buddha or Socrates? Who was born first, Buddha or Socrates? Buddha was born almost 100 years before Socrates. Now, this is a little bit easier because we're getting closer to a time period that you might have studied recently. Was the French Revolution before or after the California Gold Rush? Okay, 60 years before is all. Now, think about this for a second. This just kind of boggled my mind when I read it. Pilgrim's Progress was written while Johann Sebastian Bach was recording and the Quakers were settling Pennsylvania. That all happened at the same time. When I was in school, I was clueless as to what came first, second, and so on. For all I knew, the 13 colonies could have been the same time as ancient Rome because I never had it taught consecutively. I never learned history chronologically. Those questions came out of the Ultimate Geography and Timeline Guide. There's a whole unit in here on how to use timeline figures. And that's one of the games that you can play with the timeline figures that are in here. History is messy, though. God is orderly, but people are not. And for me to sit here or stand here and say that you can teach history strictly chronologically is not really true. Well, you could, but it'd be very confusing. You often must follow the theme of events to their natural conclusion, and then you have to go back and pick up the pieces. And that's where a timeline is so invaluable. There are two different kinds of timelines, just like there's two different kinds of maps. There's reference timelines. It's all tangled up. that are already filled out for you. Have you all seen that big brown book that opens out and out and out, the time, the whatever that's called? You know what I'm talking about. That's a reference timeline. It's wonderful to go to for reference, but it's not too many kids that are going to sit down and read it. It's a reference book. The other one is there's a big brown book called The Timetables of History. Again, it's a reference book. It's a reference timeline. The other type of timelines are the kinds that you fill out yourselves. So those are activity-based. The first timeline we ever did was on index cards. Now, this was not a pretty timeline. I'm not very artsy, but it was very effective. What we did is we took the same kind of foam board that I talked about earlier, took a big piece of it, and you can score this foam board so it folds up like a, think of a science display board. We scored it and folded it out. And then I had the older boys that I was doing at the time, we were doing explorers, we were doing exploration. They filled out a timeline card. I had questions that they had to answer. They filled it out on the card with a date, and they attached it with thumbtacks to the board in the proper location. And as we learned about more people and more events, sometimes they had to rearrange their figures to get them all in order so that they were physically manipulating the timeline board, and that was very effective. It wasn't pretty, but it worked. You might use file cards in a file box. You might use the strip style that goes around your wall. Again, I have a wall problem. If you use the strip style, which I think is wonderful, I mean, that to me probably makes the most sense because you're following things in order. Don't use it as a border around the top of your wall. It might look nice up there, but the kids can't do anything with it, and that's really not very effective. If you're going to use the strip style, have it down where they can get their hands on it within reason. Then there's the notebook method. And I think for like junior high and high school, this is a particularly effective method. The notebook method means you can keep adding to it. As you go on year in and year out, you can add to it. But you have to really have an understanding of the reading from left to right to understand the big picture of it when it's in a notebook. And then there's a poster style. And this is what I tended to use the most because, again, space considerations. But I also like this one for another reason. It's two-sided. This side has world history dates already written on it. Now, if you look at that and you think, well, when I do the Middle Ages, it's going to take up a lot more space than what they allow me. Right. That's when you turn it over to the side with no dates. As you do the Middle Ages, you write in the dates as you get to them. When you're finished with that time period, we would take a picture of it. You store the picture in your notebook. You take one icon or one picture off here that reminds you of the Middle Ages. Maybe it's a castle. You take that off and you plug it in here in the proper place. Then you wipe this clean and you go on to your next time period. Then this side is your permanent record of all the historical time periods that you cover year in and year out. So let's say you have to teach history out of order. Let's say, like in our case, we did American history out of order because we had a wonderful opportunity with a co-op to do a great American history class. Well, if I needed to, I could have pulled this out and showed where American history fit compared to what we'd just been studying. And then the following year, we can go back to where we were and see where American history was. So you can kind of use that as your overall overarching view of a timeline. Another thing I like about, well, you can do it on this one. You can do it on a notebook-style timeline. Let's talk about timeline strands for a minute. Did you know that a European history stops when American history begins? I was really surprised to find that out when I was looking for a curriculum. It was true. I'm looking at homeschool stuff, and you get all this, you get all this stuff through all this great exploration stuff, and then you start getting into American history. But then you don't know what's happening in the rest of the world. Well, there's a problem with that. That's not good. And that's one of the reasons Americans have so little understanding of current events is we just, anyway, I'm not going to go there. But one of the ways that you can remedy this problem is by using timeline strands. Now, no one can teach all facets of history simultaneously. I can't be doing African and Asian and American. I can't do them all at once. But I can pick particularly important things or topics that we haven't touched on before. For example, I'm in American history. let's say I'm going to keep a strand of what's happening in Asia at the same time. What it might look like on something like this, it might look like the top line American, the line underneath it might be Asian or European or whatever you chose. Or the top half of the timeline is devoted to American history, and the bottom half has pictures or writing of things going on in other places. Another kind of strand I might do, let's say I have a kid who's really into music, or a kid who's really into war or inventions or whatever it might be. When I'm doing European history, maybe I have a strand for music. What kind of music was being composed during that time period? Or what battles were being fought? Or what inventions were being invented? Whatever captures my children's interest would be a reason to have that separate strand. But while you're doing that, even though you're not really studying that extra strand, you're being exposed to it. And you know, as you research and find those things to put on your timeline, you know what happens? You accidentally learn a lot of other stuff you weren't planning on learning. And that is a wonderful thing. The book that we find that's just wonderful for that, this is the Usborne Book of World History Dates. What I like about it is every other page is a page of columns. At the top of the column is what part of the world is taking place. It might say Europe or Asia or North America. And then down the side are dates. So I can see at a glance what's happening in different parts of the world at the same time. I don't have to study them in depth. I'm just exposing myself and my kids to that other piece of information. The page after the every other page, I don't know how you would say that, is a close-up of an event that happened on the previous page. So it's very easy to follow. Every other page is the columns, and then the next page is always a close-up. It's not a complete history course by any means, but it's fabulous for doing timelines. Now, I don't draw. Did I mention I don't draw? I don't draw. So I would buy pre-made timeline figures, and these are the best I've ever seen. These are done by a homeschool mom in New England named Amy Pack, who also happens to be an artist. But she not only drew figures for us, she put a little annotation underneath each figure so that as you put them in your notebook or on your wall, you go back and look at it a few months later and you can't remember who that person is or what that event was, this will remind you. She has them. There's four different sets. They're by time period, so you can choose a set that matches the time period that you're studying. Very useful. I would also highly recommend listening to Diana Waring's tapes because she does a great overview of world history chronologically. And of course, if you haven't seen The Mystery of History, that teaches history chronologically and it interweaves the Bible with what's going on in secular history. All right, I want to show you some homemade timelines that all different people have made. I'm going to put this one up on the overhead, but I'm also going to pass around a photo of it so you have a chance of seeing it. This is done by a high school level. There was a girl who was in ninth grade. She was in my co-op. We used the poster style timeline. She loves to draw. She's very artistic. And so she drew her timeline herself. And the neat thing was, for a couple of years, she kept this up on her wall in her room as decoration. And I kept telling her, when you're tired of it, let me know. I'd love to take it off your hands. And she did finally redecorate, and I inherited her timeline. But that's just, I'm sure she remembers a lot of this stuff because she spent so much time drawing it. Here's a much simpler version of a timeline. This is made out of brown paper bags. So for those of you who are not artistic, have hope. There's lots of different ways that you can do timelines. Have you ever thought about your family history being a timeline? Genealogy is one of those studies that gives an amazing insight, not only into your own history, but as you do your genealogy, you can learn so much about the world as far as where your ancestors came from. And it's kids are fascinated by their own family history. So if you haven't done a little genealogy study, I'd highly recommend it. However, you know those forms that they have you fill out for who's related to who? Those confuse me. I don't like them. That's not appealing to me. And I think for children, it would be almost impossible for them to really absorb what those are about. So a friend of mine did a family history with her young elementary age children, and they did a family tree that was literally a tree. And they cut out the pictures of their photograph of their relatives, and they put them as fruit on the tree. And that's a family history, and it's a family tree, and actually it's a timeline. It's just not the way that we typically think of one. Here's another high school level timeline. This is for, Tyler did this. He was not into drawing, wasn't interested in drawing figures, but he really did a great job on the timeline. He's got the different colors represent different things, and it tells you in the beginning what it is. I don't remember. Oh, Africa is one color, Europe is blue, Middle East is green, the Far East is purple. So you can see at a glance where the different events took place. So that was another way. And he just did it on the computer as we were studying that time period. Each week he would add to his timeline. Know anybody that likes cars? Sometimes you have to pick your kids' interests to get them really going. And a friend of mine's son was really into cars. I think he was probably fifth or sixth grade at the time. And they were doing American history. And her assignment to him was to come up with a timeline for American history, and he could use cars if he wanted to. So he decided the format that he wanted, and they went around and collected, well, actually they had been collecting, calendars from auto mechanics. Because they get all these cool car and truck calendars. And what Michael put together was a timeline of cars. And as he did this, and he learned about the different types of cars, he was learning lots of other things in the meanwhile as he looked this up in the encyclopedia or on the internet or whatever. And he's got a car or a truck for almost every year up to like the 1960s, I think. I mean, that's so he spent a lot of time on it and absolutely enjoyed doing that. Sports. This is another way you can do a timeline. This was done as a newspaper timeline. Again, it was the same co-op that did this other one. The assignment was you could do any timeline you want about the 20th century. And this boy chose sports. And for every decade, and sometimes for several years within a decade, he would try to find a fact about an American sport. And he put it in a little newspaper format, made a little booklet out of it. And it's just another one of those things. As he did this, he learned a lot more than just little tidbits about sports. The original ones in color, I didn't make color copies. he printed things off the internet, cut pictures out of magazines, things like that. A great place to get free pictures for your timelines, especially specialty timelines like the cars or the trucks. After New Year's, go to your favorite shop that sells calendars and buy them for a dollar. Buy them if they look cool, even if you're not going to use them this year, because for a dollar, you're going to use them sometime. And you just can't beat the price. I've gotten them on everything from the Civil War to sharks. I have all different kinds of calendars that have great pictures or information. The Audubon Society always has nice ones. And I'll stop at two or three different bookstores or card shops looking for calendars in January and February and pick up things and save them for later. Our Department of our Department of Transportation puts out a free calendar every year that has historical photographs of our state. So you might see, if you're doing a state study, what resources you could find right here in Maine. Also, there's a lot of government publications that are put out that have historical pictures that you might want to save for a future time. I'm going to pass this around too. This has a number of photographs in it of different projects that are either geography related, or the reason I brought this mostly was the timeline pictures. There's fashions of the 20th century. There's two fashions timelines in here. There's two different sports timelines. There's playing timelines, all different kinds of timelines that we used in a co-op. And then we had a night where everyone set up their timeline to show everybody else. So this might give you some more ideas as well. Then I'm going to put some overheads up. This was a timeline that we did in one of our Sunday school classes. I wish I'd taken the picture sooner. This is a combination. I like this because it's a combination of a timeline and a map. And the reason I bring that up, and one of the reasons I do maps and timelines together in a workshop, is that when you talk about the when of something happening, when did it happen? Let's say you put a picture of, or put an icon on your timeline of Christopher Columbus, and you talked about when he began his explorations. That's good, and that will help them to remember it. But what if you then took that same picture and put it on an outline map and drew the line to where it happened? Then you've got a double whammy. You've got the when and you've got the where. And by doing it twice, both of them hands-on, you have a better chance of that information being cemented. However, let me caution you. Any type A homeschoolers in here who have to do everything that anyone ever says, okay. I meant to say this up front. You can't do all this in 1 year. Repeat after me. You can't do all this in 1 year. All right. If you're going to do the when and the where, don't do every single person and every single event. You wouldn't even be able to read your map anymore. Pick the ones that are most important in your mind for your kids to learn. And those are the ones that you spend the time on and you do on both the map and the timeline. All right. Don't try to do all of it. That's called overkill. And it's a very painful process of educating your children. All right. I'm a couple more maps here. That's just so you can get some other ideas. I'm going to run the national parks. This is fun to do during the summer when you're taking vacations. Did you know that education doesn't end in June? You can actually learn things during the summer. And that's one of the things that we like to do a lot was to do trips and go places during the summer and count it for school. This is on that two-sided map. This was the westward expansion. I did this in the co-op, and every week as we learned a new part of the westward expansion, we colored in a new part of the map. And the kids had their own notebook-sized map that they followed along and colored in at the same time. How about music? These are famous composers of Europe. And that's the tour down here. This is the tour of the London Symphony Orchestra. So that was a music family that was studying composers who did that. This is one of my very favorites. This is geography through literature. Do y'all keep a book list of any kind? Book lists are great. I think they're really important. But, you know, it can get kind of boring after a while to keep your book list all the time on a piece of paper. A map book list is much more interesting. The kids can draw a picture of the book up there, they can draw a line to where that book took place, or they can draw travels of the main characters where they went in the book. And at the end of the year, you have a record of the books that they read. Again, you can take a picture of it, keep the picture, and erase it and use it some more. So there's just any number of ways that you can do the maps. And then this is probably the most typical way. This is labeling. And all the other things I've said, don't get me wrong, labeling is important too. You do want to know the names of places that you're studying. So use your maps in a variety of ways. Don't get stuck in a rut. Don't do them the same way every time. All right, what were the two things I wanted you to know? What you do with your hands, you remember. What we perform, we remember. And the second thing, that's the third thing. If it's fun, you're motivated to do more. And the third thing is, don't do it all in 1 year. I thank you all very much for being here today, and I hope to see you guys tomorrow. And we're right out here at Bright Ideas Press. If you've got any of my stuff, if you want to throw it up front before you leave, that would be great. Thanks a lot.